All right, I'm just doing up the top button here. Oh, we're not on TV yet. Let's get this morning meeting going, guys. It's the Friday show.
It's Friday, gotta get down.
That's all you have to say. It's the Friday show. We don't have to be good today. Nobody cares. Mail it in Fridays. We're just going to do our thing, and whatever happens, happens. Richard Krause back from his 1 week vacation.
Richard will be joining us this morning, yes.
What are the big movies today?
One of them is we've got Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
That's the animated movie you had on trending the other day?
Yes, it is. And then we've got Boogeyman, an adaptation of a Stephen King novel.
That sounds terrifying.
And then we've got Bone and Crown.
Although, how scary can you be when you're called the Boogeyman? Does anyone take a villain named the Boogeyman seriously?
I don't know. I read the book as a kid and I was pretty terrified. So,
yeah. He has a way of terrifying you. Yeah. And what's the other one?
We've got Bones and Crowns, which is a Cree Nation story of a soldier someone who is First Nations who helped during the Second World War in code.
Okay. That sounds potentially very sad.
The trailer kind of had me tearing up, and all I was doing was getting it ready for the show.
All right, but not a big summer blockbuster weekend yet. Maybe it's a little early for that still, right? We're just into June. I know it feels like we're in the middle of July or August, but still a bit early.
Spider-Man's going to make a boatload of money, Bill.
That is going to be huge. No, but I just mean you don't have like two or three big movies all opening at the same time.
And Little Mermaid came out last week, so there's still that option for parents, right? I found it.
Yeah, it did pretty well at the box office, right?
Really, I think it did okay, yeah.
Yeah, despite all the controversy.
No Fast and the Furious 10 box office, but.
Have you seen it yet, Fast and Furious?
No, but it made like $350 million in its opening weekend. Like, who's seeing these movies still? There's 12 of them or 11 of them.
Isn't it 10? Fast and Furious.
Well,
10.
there was a spin-off movie. Oh. So this is technically the 11th.
Well, that's confusing. The fact that they also, most people are calling it Fast and Furious X is also a little
confusing.
But I went to the very first one with my producer at the time. And he loved it, and I thought, this is really dumb. I could barely sit through it. It was an afternoon. It was a matinee in a big old vaudeville kind of theater in Toronto, which has since closed down. But I just didn't understand it at all. I just thought it was so silly and over the top. And, of course, I said, this is never going to go anywhere. He said, this could be a franchise. I'm like, come on, don't be ridiculous. Didn't know any of the actors, thought the premise was dumb. I didn't think the action was, after the first couple of race scenes, I thought the action was pretty dull. Now look, you got cars flying in space, and there's 10 or 11 of them. Missed that call, didn't I?
Yeah, that's okay. Did you ever see
Point
Break?
You know how many I've seen since the first one?
You haven't seen any.
I think I may have streamed one with my kids once. They made it somewhere like around 7 or 8. Mm. Just to see where, I didn't do it on purpose. They wanted to see it. But I got a chance to see where the franchise had gone, and it had become kind of unrecognizable to me. Not any less silly premise.
Yeah. The fifth one I really liked because they added The Rock in it, and it was like a heist movie, and it was pretty good. But I think it's been downhill since then. They kept just adding actors and actresses. In the new one, the guy who plays Reacher's in it, Alan Richardson.
When is that show coming back? That was fun.
I'll find out.
I loved Reacher. Show. Reacher was with Tom Cruise played him in the movie, right?
Yeah.
And then there's a TV series, only one season. I'm thinking, that guy's not Tom Cruise, although people who read the book say that the Tom Cruise didn't look like the Reacher they expected at all because he was too small. But in the TV show, he's a big, lumbering guy. And I thought, he has no charisma at all. But in the end, I loved him in that. I'd forgotten all about it. And I guess we're probably not going to have anything anytime soon now with that writer's strike going on. The strike hardly anyone here is talking about. Good morning, Annette.
Good morning. I don't know what you're talking about, but it just reminded
me. Character Jack Reacher.
I don't know who that is.
No?
What show? What series?
It was a series of books. Tom Cruise played him in the movies. And then there's a, I forget whether it was an HBO or Netflix series. I don't remember now, but.
Hey,
a couple of years ago, I think maybe just around the beginning of COVID.
Okay.
So the second season's done, and it should be coming out soon. That's what this.
Come on.
Is. Yeah.
Well, that's something. To
I
look
follow the
to.
Actor because he used to be in like one of my favorite TV shows, and then he was a Ninja Turtle in the franchise 8 years ago. So,
is there anyone you like who hasn't been a Ninja Turtle?
Corey Feldman. I don't like, and he was a Ninja Turtle. Does that help?
You don't like Corey Feldman?
No, I find him lame.
I interviewed Corey Feldman. I can't even think how many years ago. It's got to be 20.
Yeah.
His band was playing at a rave in Toronto. And I just, the two Feldmans, Corey Feldman, Corey
Hart?
Haim. Corey Haim, were two people I had no stomach for. But Corey Feldman was a great guy, invited me to come to the event. We hung out all night long. We laughed our butts off, met a couple of other Hollywood celebrities in Toronto. And I was there till like 5 a.m. I had the best time with Corey Feldman.
Oh.
And so when I moved to Los Angeles, they put me up in this temporary housing complex. It's a bunch of like 4-story buildings, a massive complex. So you have a hotel room, but it's more like an apartment. You have a little kitchen and everything. And it was the time of year where pilot season.
Mm-hmm.
So all these actors pour into Hollywood to audition for pilots or to record pilots, but they don't stay permanently. And I ran into Corey Haim there and I said, hey, I met your old, cause they did a bunch of movies together, and I hung out with him a little bit. And then Corey Haim, I don't know, I was there a week when he died in the apartment next, not this, the apartment next to mine. The apartment building next to the building that I was in.
Mm.
So I knew the Coreys.
Mm.
So there you go. He was actually kind of a fun guy in person.
Well, now I feel bad saying I don't like him. But
stop the hate.
And you know what? I did like him as a Ninja Turtle. I just don't like anything else I've seen. And Annette, I sent you a photo of Reacher. You're welcome.
Okay.
Okay. That's a way to boost your Friday.
Ooh, okay.
Do you have an exact date Reacher's going to start?
It said not June 2023, but it says it's coming out in 2023.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, he's pretty, eh?
Wow.
He's pretty. Did you just call him pretty? Show me the picture.
Do you look like
been
that?
To the gym?
Do you look like that when you take your shirt off? Right? This guy really should start working out. Ugh.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Shame about that.
Yeah.
I don't think he's very handsome.
Really?
He's very fit.
I think he's
not in that picture anyway. I found him in the TV series. I thought he was, you could tell he's a big muscular guy.
Yeah.
I thought he was average looking. That's what I liked about him. He looked like an average guy.
Yeah, you could maybe say, yeah.
I don't think he's strikingly handsome.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call him pretty.
No, but I think average is a little bit better maybe. The Hollywood perfect look is, you know.
I personally believe that women should look below average for their men.
Okay.
You know, if you're looking for a man, look for a less than handsome man. Someone who has to work harder, treat you well.
Okay.
At least that was my sales pitch.
It worked.
It did. It worked a surprising number of times over the years, actually.
Well, you landed the best of the best.
It didn't tend to stick until finally I met Sylvie. And I'm pretty happy with that turn of events. That
are you... Speaking of shows, did you stayed with Ted Lasso, right? Did you stay with it all 3 seasons?
I did, and I found it a little difficult to stay with it early in season 3. First of all, where's Ted Lasso in Ted Lasso?
Yeah.
We didn't see that much of him, and there were a lot of side stories that they're obviously setting up spinoffs, I thought. But
oh, yeah?
Yeah, and then it got better and better as the season went on. It was okay, and the finale was really good.
I know. You know when a show ends or a series ends and the last one sticks with you for days and you can't stop thinking about it? That's how I feel about this one. Yeah, I found season two was a little bit, but this one to me I really liked, and the finale was that. I can't stop thinking
season
about it.
Season one was so strong. It would be hard to beat that. It was so good. Season two I thought was okay, and then season three, probably on balance, season three turned out to be okay as well, but the finale was great.
Everything about it I loved, yeah. That got me thinking
just
about
like
that.
The season finale, the series finale of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel will stick with you for days as well.
Yeah? I haven't watched that series. No.
You haven't, huh?
No. Okay. Well, now I need something new. Maybe that's it.
I think for women in the workforce, which is most women these days, and people like me who have a daughter, it's just a great story of a woman's struggle at a time in history through the 50s and 60s where they were just starting to say, enough now.
Right.
That's it. We're the 50s. They were at home with their aprons, and a good life was, I got a brand new vacuum cleaner, if you watched enough TV shows, right? And Mrs. Maisel, she was happy to live that life, but her husband cheated on her. So now she's on her own with a couple of young kids, and she's got to make her way through the world on her own. And she makes this courageous decision to enter an industry that women are not in at all.
Okay.
And while it's hilarious, it's, you know, only on the surface about a woman becoming a stand-up comedian. It's about every woman in that time period.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I'll have to watch that one.
The second last episode, her dad makes a speech at a dinner table with a bunch of friends about how he finally sees his daughter.
Wow.
I had freaking tears pouring down my cheeks.
Oh, that sounds
good. I was
rooting
for her. I was all, you go, girl. It was great. And then the series finale was excellent, too.
Is that a couple seasons or a lot?
I think four, maybe. Okay. I forget, four or five. They're only 9 or 10 episodes
per
series.
Season. Okay.
It's really good. Matt Harris talked me into watching it.
Yeah.
The acting is a bit deliberately stage-like and over the top.
Okay.
And they also sort of speak the way people did in the 50s. Remember what reporters sounded like in the 50s?
Yes, it's time for the news.
Police have taken to the streets in Chicago today. So it has that kind of vibe to it, which I found a bit off-putting because everybody spoke with the same rhythm in all the characters in the show.
Yeah.
But I quickly put that aside. I was so glad he talked me into it. One of the best TV series around, for sure.
Okay. Well, you've sold me. I'll do it.
Now I have no binge watching for Monday because you asked me about Ted Lasso.
You should just keep talking about Ted Lasso. I've seen some of the interviews that the characters have been doing with, you know, the news outlets in the last few days since the finale, and just talking about how purposeful so much of what they did, you know, like Ted Lasso's character, Jason Sudeikis, talking about how purposeful that, like, he didn't swear and that he was, you know, he would always turn a negative into a positive, and how there were so many little subtleties that you can take from the characters and apply them to your own life in a way. I mean, that how he's such an unusual type character, but the kind of person everybody loves.
It was the show we needed, too, when we needed it.
Yes.
Season one, in the middle of the lockdowns, we all needed some optimism.
Yeah, and something light and funny, but then in season two, they really got into a lot of the big issues, like mental health. You know, Ted Lasso's mental health struggles. I thought that was so well done in ways that were not. I think some, like, you know, there's the Sex and the City reboot, and just like that. And I think they tried really hard to tackle everything from the Me Too movement to mental health stuff, everything that was in, that was being talked about at the time. And it was just too much. But Ted Lasso, yeah, exactly. It felt like you were being saturated. Ted Lasso, I find, really tackled some big issues in a really muted but effective way. Not in your face. It just really came across well. I think the writers were brilliant there.
Do we have any news to talk about today?
I know, right? I'm a movie critic now, or a show critic, right? The weather is really the big story. So this will be the last day of that Rex block, the hot weather, in other words. We reached a record yesterday, not only reached it, like shattered it, 35.1 degrees. That's before any humidex is factored in. That was recorded at the Ottawa airport. That's likely to happen again today.
What was the old record? Do you remember?
Oh, I believe it was 29 point something.
God.
It was in around the 29 stage because we were talking that it could get close. So, I mean, we got way above that. And then today the forecast is pretty much the same. Though today there is a good chance of rain and thunderstorms. So that's where there's a little bit of worry there, because with these hot, dry conditions, we'll see.
Yeah, because so far Ontario has been a little bit lucky. I think the rest of the country's on fire.
That's right.
Quebec now starting to have some wildfires. There were, I think, a couple hundred thousand customers without power in Quebec yesterday because of fires and how it impacted on hydro lines. And
yeah, and just to put it into perspective, like, I know we keep hearing the word hectares, and most people are like, well, what's a hectare? How do we measure that? 1 hectare is 2.5 football fields. So when you hear, like, 10,000 hectares,
yeah,
it's like 30,000 football fields. That's, like, the size. It's so much land in this country right now that has been scorched. So it's a, you know, and pictures
so
we're seeing.
So we're losing our trees to storms, wind storms. Ice storms, now fires.
Yeah.
Pretty much the entire country is going to be prairies if this keeps up.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Let's hope we manage to get some rain and
the weekend looks
dodge
good,
the
though.
Wildfires.
Yeah, after today, we cool off significantly over the weekend. I mean cool off meaning 23 and sunny.
Yeah, it's going to be beautiful this
yes,
weekend.
It really is.
Yesterday was nice, too, but I had an appointment in the morning and then tee off time that was a little, you know, I mean, I can't do the 7 o'clock tee off times,
right.
Obviously people do. And by the time I was out there, there weren't that many people left on the golf course. And I walked 18 holes.
You did? No way.
God, I was dying.
Holy cow.
I drank so much water, and not to be crude, but it was 3 hours after golf before I finally had to pee again.
Wow.
And I'm telling you, I PJ'd water down. Man, I was guzzling this stuff.
You would have to.
Yeah, because I last year I came back and my heart rate, I got home, my heart was like 120 beats a minute for half an hour.
Oh my God.
Because I was overheated. I got heat stroke, I think. And I was guzzling down water then as well and staying in the cool and cold cloths and like, because I just didn't take enough care. So I kept putting on the sunscreen, and I carried an umbrella to keep myself shaded. But,
yeah.
And drink. Carlton Golf Club has a lot of drinking water stations
That's
and stuff,
good.
Too, so that helped. But even at that, I was like, oh, my God, this is crazy.
I'm surprised you did it. That's, yeah, because it's a tough, it was hard just to walk outside to your car.
By the 18th hole, I was kicking the ball down the field. I couldn't even pick up a club. Let alone sling one. Just kicking it in front of me.
Yeah.
102, 103, 104.
Probably
that's
not
just
your
that
best
hole.
Score.
But I was not giving up.
Nope.
I just kept thinking, January.
You've become one of the diehards out there.
Nothing's going to stop me. Well, I went through my first winter without gaining weight in years.
Yeah.
I held my weight. So now, you know, summer's here. I want to get out and get the exercise and maybe drop a little bit.
Well, you probably
hold again
sweat
for
off
next winter. That's my new plan.
Okay.
Lose a bit in the summer. Just hold the line through Christmas and the winter.
Yeah.
Just hold it. Like, don't let the dam or your belt burst. So I got to do it.
You probably sweat off about 63 pounds yesterday.
Oh, I must have lost 10 pounds yesterday for sure. Mm-hmm. Ooh, it was unbelievable. All right. Thank you, Annette. 5:31, the Morning Rush. Morning meeting live at5:55 on this beautiful Friday morning and heading into a cooler and really lovely weekend. Looks like it's going to be just about picture perfect. Ethan is in for Katie this week, and thanks for doing that and helping us out. He'll be here next week as well. All week long?
All week long.
All right. So what's trending today?
So I was on Twitter last night, and I was shocked to see that the House of Commons was top of the line trending for Twitter after a bit of a fiery exchange between Pierre Poilievre and Justin Trudeau, less about politics and more just personal blows and what is being called possibly the greatest exchange in Canadian politics history. And it started
the greatest exchange
in Canadian politics.
Canadian
history.
Politics history.
I couldn't believe it. And then I watched
that's
it,
a big,
and it was amazing.
That's a big statement you're making there.
And I mean, when Pierre Poilievre, he stood up and he was, of course, addressing foreign interference, which has just been dominating the House of Commons. But it started with a bit of a personal attack toward Justin Trudeau. Can we get part one here, PJ?
So the high school drama teacher over here accuses others of liking the sounds of their own voices. This from a guy who, if he were made of chocolate, he would eat himself.
That was one of my mother's favorite expressions. My whole childhood, I'd hear her use that in various situations. If you were acting a little too high on yourself, if you were bloody chocolate, you'd eat yourself. And I said, Mom, if anything was chocolate, I would eat it. Right. No exception. Not just because it's me. If you were chocolate, you'd eat yourself. It's an old line. We dusted it off and brought it out. It's a good one.
And Trudeau, he didn't take it lightly. He was sitting around and he wanted to fire back at Pierre Poilievre. And everyone thought Trudeau's response here was a bit of a knockout blow. PJ, part two.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I was a high school teacher before getting into politics, and I'm having a little trouble remembering what exactly the job that the Leader of the Opposition had before getting into politics.
So everyone thought Poilievre was on a bit on the back foot.
It's a good line,
one.
Yeah.
Very good one.
That's a good punch, but we know Pierre Poilievre is a good counterpuncher.
He threw it back. Part three, PJ.
And he left right in the middle of the semester, and I'm having trouble remembering why.
Oh. Of course, referring to a little bit of a, we'll say, trouble Trudeau got into when he was still a high school drama teacher. And it just went down as one of the greatest exchanges people had ever seen in the House. The entire press gallery was up. The entire opposition side, including the NDP, was up. It was just an amazing kind of exchange that had people on Twitter talking. And Poilievre is getting a little bit of a pushback, as is Trudeau. You know, like, you really shouldn't be bringing personal affairs into politics and whatever. But, I mean, it's something that drew a lot of attention to the House and what's going on. And just, wow, right?
Yeah, I guess what I don't like about this story is that it kind of screams out for further explanation, right? There are a lot of conspiracy theories online, and I have trouble knowing what's true and what's not true, but why did he leave his high school job? And so Pierre Poilievre throws that out there, and if you know the conspiracy theory, he's kind of fueling it, and if you don't know, then you're left going, well, I don't understand the joke.
Yeah.
So to do it on radio, to talk about it on radio, if I was going to do it, I thought, well, then I'd have to kind of explain what the conspiracy theories are, and I think that's a bit unfair. And you know, I don't have a problem taking shots at Justin Trudeau. That is not an area I've ever had trouble with, but like, do I really want to go there? And that's what people are mad with Pierre Poilievre about too, like,
yeah,
saying he went there. Come on, bringing up or casting our minds towards a scandal that
This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Most exciting part about this weekend and the weather is that it's not even the beginning of summer yet, let alone midsummer. I mean, it's been, we went from winter to summer in a week, and it was so scorching yesterday, but this weekend is going to be spectacular. But let's just take a moment to remember, it is Friday. It's the Friday show. It's the Friday show.
It's Friday, Friday, gotta get down on Friday.
There you go. PJ, you missed a beat there for a wedding DJ.
We don't usually do it in the 6 hours.
I know. I'm messing with you there.
But I know. Sorry.
Gave you a clear. Is that not one of your, what do you call them? Your fast keys? Your.
No, because I would only use it Fridays. I need.
Oh, that's true. There's no point in having it right there at your fingertips at all times. Okay, let's just put you to the test here, okay? So it's Friday.
It's Friday, Friday.
And we still have a special rapporteur.
Does it come with a costume? Maybe a cape or and a sword?
All right, we're all getting warmed up now. That's good. We're getting the show underway. I thought no one at the city of Ottawa, actually, I'm under the impression that no government employee ever gets fired. governments don't like to fire people. They have union protections. The processes are long and dragged out. But it's not true. Some people actually get fired. And I bet when you hear this, you're going to go, yeah, when it comes to the pandemic, yeah, now they fire people. They don't fire them for any other reason. Well, that's not entirely true either, but it does. You might come to that conclusion today because we learned that two City of Ottawa employees with medical-related duties have been fired because it is alleged they submitted falsified vaccination documents last year. The city's auditor general says an investigation began with a tip to the city's fraud hotline. Look at that. Another member of city staff also resigned yesterday after an investigation showed the person using a city truck to take part in the Freedom Convoy. Come on. You can't do that. You took a seat. That makes me laugh. You can tell. You're driving a truck. You got City of Ottawa, the big slogan on it. I'm just going to show up at the trucker protest. No, you can't do that. Councillor Wilson Lowe says the city has an obligation to protect taxpayers' money.
These are city assets that are paid for by the taxpayer. To know that they're improperly used would obviously make some people feel uneasy. So I believe this process is important.
Now, I almost called the hotline once because I noticed that on garbage day in our neighborhood, that's today actually, I'm looking outside, I don't see any garbage out there. I'm going to have to wake up a teenage boy. But I noticed that on garbage day, there are always a couple of garbage trucks. When I say always, that's not fair. I mean, they may not be there right now on a Friday because I'm not there. But by the time I get off the air and I go out and run chores, I see these couple, sometimes three garbage trucks parked near the public library in Manotick. And at first I thought to myself, well, what are these lazy guys doing? Like, it's garbage day. Shouldn't they be driving around picking up garbage? And the trucks are there. And I assumed they're just inside, I don't know, drinking a beer or something. But I took a beat and I didn't call to complain. I thought, well, maybe there's something else going on there. And I don't know for sure what it is. If someone at the city can answer this question for me definitively, I'd love to hear it. 580-580. But I put the cynic in me aside and I just waited. And I looked and I realized I've never seen anyone around the truck, ever. I have a feeling what they're doing is they're leaving those trucks there so that the drivers, when they've filled up some of the trucks they're in, they swap them out or something. I feel like there's some logistical reason, or they're waiting for the next shift to arrive, or there's something going on there. Because there's no one in the truck. It's not like they're taking a break. Now, I could be wrong. They could be under the bridge in Manotick doing whatever people do under a bridge. Getting drunk, getting stoned, getting a little action. I have no idea. No, but I think that's what it is. I think there's some logistic reason. So now I'm just curious about it. So if somebody knows why those trucks sit there for long parts of the day, please tell me. 580-580. I think that's what it is. Because maybe it's easier than driving all the trucks to the dump and then bringing it back. Maybe it's faster to leave trucks there that have already gone to the dump and you leave them for the next crew to pick. Like maybe there's one guy just goes to the dump and you got teams of two that go around and collect garbage. I don't know the answer to it, but these are the things that bother me that you can't Google. There's no easy answer. And so it's been on my mind for years here. So this is the first time I thought to bring it up. So somebody please tell me what it is I'm seeing there. 580-580 standard rates may apply. Hell, I'll give you the 10 cents or whatever it costs if you've got a terrible phone provider and you're actually paying a lot for a text. But just to know what the answer to that question is. Number of students were absent from schools across the Ontario Catholic School Board yesterday. My daughter in high school was at the board office for Pride-related events. The board raised the Pride flag. Some boards, Catholic boards in the Toronto region, did not. They say, we got advice from the Archbishop who said it's not in line with Catholic teaching, so we're not putting the flag up. Reese Walker says the flag welcomes inclusion and has received overall positive response.
I think it's just amazing that so many people at my school are being represented. It makes a lot of people just feel included at our school.
Yeah, I mean, I take my cues from kids here, especially high school age. They're very comfortable with this, and they know it's about people who once were, and I guess to some degree, obviously still are, people who didn't feel like they could be part of society and live their lives and love whoever they loved and face discrimination and sometimes violence as a result of that. And this was the gay community's decision to stand up and say, enough, we're going to be treated like human beings. And it's not ultimately about their sexuality. It's about just the right to exist, the right to be and be safe. So I'm not uncomfortable with it at all. But, you know, I think there's kind of a classic lesson in all of this. And the lesson can be when society is changing, sometimes you got to bring in the hammer, right? Sometimes you do have to hit hard and make change. But there's a time also when you have to recognize you're winning and then maybe soft pedal a little bit here. Because I think it just feels to me like gay rights are starting to slip backwards in our community. We're having these heated debates about things that seemed settled half a dozen years ago. And you got to wonder what that is. And I think it's because some people say, well, it's become dogma at these schools now. That's all they talk about. Everything they do every day. My kids are coming home and they're talking about gender and gender language and same-sex rights and same-sex marriage. And so maybe there has been a little bit of overreach there. I think we have to reset things, though. We have to go back to the beginning and remember this is ultimately just about human rights, the right to exist and live your life and don't bother anybody else. But there are people who think, well, you are bothering me with it because you keep talking about it. So, yeah, it's a tough line to walk. But my kids attended the events yesterday. I didn't have any problem with that and never will. People can sleep with whoever they want. You know, if they're going to start having sex, whether it's a same-sex couple or an opposite-sex couple, you're going to start doing it on my front porch, I'm going to have a problem. And I don't care what you do behind closed doors. It is not my business. And if you just want to hold hands in public or kiss, I don't care. I just don't believe that my kids are influenced about their sexuality in that way. Not long-term. There may be fads and trends, but long-term, yeah, I think you're attracted to who you're attracted to. 6:17, it's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
Ottawa, up to the minute. Join the conversation on the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll. Text 580-580 right now.
Ethan, did anyone have an answer to me about why garbage trucks are left sitting around on trash day?
Yes. Someone actually messaged in. They were a waste collector for 25 years.
Okay. Let's see. Did it pay off for me to just hold my cynical voice for a moment?
It did. Because they bring the empty trucks to just like a kind of neutral empty location, and then they swap them out when they get full.
Ah, I knew it. Okay, see, now aren't I glad that I didn't drop a dime on the rat line and go, why are these lazy garbage workers not working? Because I'm admitting it. That was my first thought. I'm like, well, what are they hanging around there for? First thought. Second thought, there's no one actually hanging around. It's just empty trucks. Okay, there's got to be a reason for that. And the only answer could be, why have trucks driving back and forth to the dump all the time and wasting manpower? So it's actually clever. It's good use of human resources. All right. Well, who was that person who told us that? Did they give a name?
They did not give a name.
Well, whoever you are, thank you for explaining to me. Now I know. That's something they should probably like. I am glad that they do it in an area where there are no houses. Can you imagine having the garbage truck parked right in front of your house while they wait to pick it up? Oh, no, thank you. Can't use my front lawn. But it's in the right spot. There's an empty field on one side, and on the other side, it's a parking lot and a public library. So it's unsightly, but you got to pick up the garbage. They have to be somewhere. So that's the city doing its job. Am I complimenting the city right now? Is that what's happening? Am I okay? Maybe I did get sunstroke yesterday. I think I might be delirious. You may notice there's some street signs out there. You know, Ottawa, they have that kind of stylized O, the little swirl that comes off the Ottawa. Well, people have noticed that a number of new street signs are missing the City of Ottawa swirl, the branding. They're changing road markers to have a font similar to cities across the province, like Toronto and Kingston. And some residents Don't like that.
I guess it doesn't have the same, like, personal flair as the older signs. Is there a reason that it's not there?
I don't know, Raquel Ormandy, whoever you are, I don't know. City says 12 signs were actually printed without the logo by mistake, and they'll be correcting the issue soon, but City Councilor Wilson Lowe believes the sign looks better without the logo.
Personally, I feel not having the branding there is kind of cleaner and helps you see better when you're driving. But if that's the city's design guidelines, then, you know, we don't really have much of a choice there.
So is it that we're changing the road markers to look more like other signs across the province, or that it was a printing error? Because I'm hearing both explanations in that story, and now I'm confused again.
So it's like a mix of both. So they were supposed to have the new font and the city logo, but the signs that they put up just had the new font, and they accidentally forgot to put the logo on it. They were misprinted.
Oh, I see. So we're supposed to be going for a compromise between the two.
Yes.
Got it. And this one, just a printing error. So we can probably throw those out in the trash today, but don't throw it in the back of a garbage truck that's just sitting there without anyone in it, because... Well, that's dangerous. Don't play with garbage equipment. Do you ever watch them work and the stuff that those trucks can crush? You throw these giant things in there, you go, there's no way to get, oh, look at that. That's a dangerous job. And I would not want to be doing that job today. Man, oh man, hanging onto the back of a garbage truck, doing manual labor. No, thank you. They do a good job on that in the city of Ottawa as well. They pick up everything. They don't seem to. In Toronto, they used to leave stuff behind, not tagged properly, not in the right bin, and just take it all, which I love. That could change with the new bag and tag system, should that ever happen. 6:29, it's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
Okay, here we go.
Here we go.
And we're rolling and...
At the Movies with Richard Krause.
Action!
We missed you last week, Richard.
Well, I missed you guys too, but I was in last week on Friday. I think I was in London celebrating my birthday. So,
oh, happy birthday! I wouldn't have missed us at all if I'd been in London celebrating your birthday. We did steal liberally from your online reviews of the movies that were opening, but we credited you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
But it's not the same. It's not the same as having you here, and I can ask questions and get more details. Okay. You know I'm not going to see this one. You know I'm not going to like it, but I think a lot of people will. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
My name is Miles Morales. I'm Brooklyn's one and only Spider-Man. And things are going great.
Oh, yeah. You were supposed to be here at 5.
All right, whatever.
Miles!
Want to get out of here?
Oh, Gwen? So wait a minute. There's an elite crew with all the best spider people in it?
Who's the new guy?
Danger.
This is unbelievable.
Don't even get me started on Doctor Strange and the little nerd back on Earth 1999-99.
Come on, go easy on the kid. He had a terrible teacher.
Peter.
Miles.
So this one may not be for you. But
you think?
It's going to be for everybody else. This is a really good movie. It's called... Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. It's a sequel to a film that came out about 5 years ago, and it was called Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and it's one of those multiverse Marvel movies where there are layers and layers and layers of universes, and in each of these alternate universes, there is their own version of Spider-Man. So you have a punk rock Spider-Man who lives in a version of Britain. You've got all sorts of them. The main story focuses around Gwen, who is legendary from the comic books. She plays Spider-Woman, and Miles Morales, who was the star of the first film in this series, who is a Spider-Man from Brooklyn. And they go into the Spider-Verse. Miles changes history a little bit by doing something that he probably shouldn't have done. And then they have to go to Spider HQ. And it all sounds kind of silly, except when you are sitting in the theater watching this, the visuals are so striking. It is a pop culture pastiche. It is a little bit of every style of animation, of artwork, of anything you can imagine thrown on the screen in the most inventive ways. It makes your eyeballs dance. It'll give your eyeballs a Charles Atlas-style workout. It's really something.
Even on my phone and just watching the trailer, it does look beautiful.
It's unbelievable.
There's a warmth and a... I look at it and it reminds me of the comic books when I was a kid, but come to life.
Well, and that is what makes this movie great. So you've got these incredible visuals, and you also have kind of emotional moments. This is a movie that is about these teens who are trying to navigate their way through being superheroes, plus have relationships with their parents, plus just figure out the world in terms of their, obligation as superheroes versus what they want just for themselves personally. So there's some meat on the bone here as well. But the thing that I loved about this movie is what you just said. Unlike most of the other big superhero movies that have come out in the last, I mean, we're going on 15 years of these things now, and we've seen 3 and 4 of them a year. Unlike most of those other ones, this one does feel like a comic book. This one does feel like it's got that kind of anarchy that I used to love in the Spider-Man comic books when I was a kid, and that's what makes this one great.
I'm almost tempted, Richard.
It's really good. It's
because
really
maybe
good.
Without it being live action, I can put aside this feeling of how silly it all is and just be in it, right? Like maybe I'd have less trouble getting into that world because it looks like a comic book. And
yeah, and the soundtrack's unbelievable. This is really an impressive film that is, I think, probably one of those rare sequels that's better than the original.
All right, but is it worth seeing the first one if you're going to see the second one?
It might help at least go to the Wikipedia page probably and have a look. The story itself, when you're trying to read about it or as I've tried to describe it, is confusing because there's multiverses and there's, hundreds of Spider-Men in this one. I don't know how many, but there's got to be at least 100 Spider people in this. So it can get, I think, a little overwhelming if you're just reading about it. Go sit back and enjoy, and you'll get something out of it.
Okay, here's another one. The Boogeyman.
When there are scary things we don't understand, our minds try to fill in the blanks. Sometimes the best thing to do is to face it, so you can see that there's nothing to be afraid of. Okay?
You're doing okay. It's not real.
So the boogeyman's coming to get you. What exactly does that mean? Well, it's hard to know because the boogeyman, unlike Frankenstein or Dracula or the werewolf, any of those classic monsters, doesn't really have a form. It can be whatever it is that scares you. So imagine, as this movie does, where you have this kind of creature of the night who is drawn to people who are experiencing trauma, and it feeds off their grief. In this situation, you've got a young family. The mother dies suddenly. Two daughters, one a preteen, one a 16-year-old, are just trying to figure out life after the death of their mother. And then this evil entity comes in and sort of invades their home and starts tormenting them. And they have to fight back. And what I liked about this movie is that it's all atmosphere. It really sets up this just feeling of dread and trauma that is so important to making sure that this movie works and that you understand the story. And then you've got the relationship between the two daughters, one of whom is played by Sophie Thatcher, who you'll know from Yellowjackets if you've been watching that show. She's the older sister, and I love the relationship between the two of them, where you have the 16-year-old who's really looking out for her younger, more vulnerable daughter or sister. And so you've got a nice family element, I think, which is important when you've got a horror film about a family being torn apart. You've got a strong thing there. And then you've got this creature who is, you actually do see the boogeyman. He does have a form, but it's not really so much about the character and the the terrifying nature of what he does, as it is about just this feeling of dread that you're going to walk out of the theater with. And it'll give you that endorphin rush that you want from a horror film. But it's not exactly the scariest movie, although it is intense. It's just got this great atmosphere about it.
Bone of Crowns.
My name is Aileen Spears. I am from the Cree Nation in Manitoba, Canada.
And things are too good. I'm just scared that things will be taken away.
I want my children home where they should be.
It's the law, Matthew. You'd go to jail if you don't sign. Think of the education they would receive. If it wasn't for the church, a residential school system would never exist.
We have 324 students that will keep them in a state of malnutrition.
I need your protection. You're an Indian. I don't owe you anything.
So this is called Bones of Crows. It's in theaters now.
Oh, sorry, I misread that.
And it is about 100 years of history condensed into about 2 hours, maybe 2.5 hours. And it is the story, essentially, boiled down, of the family of a young Cree woman. The kids are taken, put into residential schools, abused terribly. Then after going through that system where they've had their Cree language beaten out of them and the religion and all that sort of thing, she enrolls in the army and becomes a coder using the Cree language during the Second World War. She meets another young indigenous officer. They get married. And then after the war, we learn of the sort of intergenerational trauma that continues to plague the family. And it's a very, very intense film. And there's a lot of scenes in here of cruelty and just horrific behavior on behalf of the teachers at the residential schools that will be very hard to watch. But I think that this film is an important look at what happens with intergenerational trauma. But it's also a celebration of the resilience of the Cree people and their traditions. So while it has some very, very difficult scenes, it is also, I think, ultimately a movie that will suggest that there is a way forward. It has an eye to the future, which is, I think, important in a story like this.
All right. Today'd be a great day to catch one of these movies to escape the heat, right? A nice, cool, air-conditioned movie theater.
Movies are very important at this time of year.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right. Well, it sounds like all three are worth seeing in their own way, and I might even take in Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. I'll let you know how that goes.
Yeah, we'll talk about it next week.
Thank you, Richard.
All right, Bill. Thanks.
Richard Krause. Check out his Last Call podcast, available now on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning, Bill.
I know you'll remember this, but to the audience, do you guys remember when there was a shortage of drugs available for children? Your kids had RSV or COVID and they had a fever and you couldn't get drugs. And then if you did get drugs, they were coming in from other countries or you were using adult versions and trying to get the dose right. Well, a new study shows that quite often we were getting it wrong. How serious was this, or potentially could this have been?
Well, it can be, especially if you're using acetaminophen or Tylenol or ibuprofen, anti-inflammatory. If you use part of the problem, Bill, is either too much or too little. That was the other issue. So if you have children that were suffering with pain or had fever, and you didn't measure properly and you underdosed, it didn't work very well. And so parents were then concerned, well, medication's not working. Something's really wrong with my child. So there's a misinterpretation of the severity of their illness or how it's responding. And then overdosing, well, if you overdose on acetaminophen, there's potential for liver damage, for anti-inflammatories, gastrointestinal problems if you're overdosing. So there are issues with respect to providing the proper dosing. And this is the Ontario Poison Control reported that he had many more calls.
Common, though. We don't really feel like they could be very harmful, which is obviously naive, right?
Right. I mean, as with anything, any medication that you are using, if it's not used according to recommendations or the dosing, the proper dosing, you can cause a problem. They're safe when used appropriately, but as with anything, if you use too much of anything or too little, you can end up with problems. And so in this case, I thought it would be a good idea to point out that the Ontario Poison Control has, and this is from the CTV News website. So the article is entitled Medication Shortage in Canada Led to Increased Dosing Errors in Children, New Study Shows. And there's a link in this that takes you to the Ontario Poison Control Center and a table that has, in the event if you don't have the liquid version, so in the future, or if there is a shortage again, if you don't have the liquid versions of these medications for children, there is a guide that is based on the child's weight that tells you how much of an adult tablet you can use for the child based on their weight. And this is what's extremely important. I would never really go by the child's age. A lot of times you'll see on the packages, even the liquid versions, they have, if your child is this age, this is what you should use. It's always better to go by the child's weight. And an easy way to remember how much to use when you're measuring is that for ibuprofen or Advil, it's 10 milligrams per kilogram per dose, and it's every 6 to 8 hours. So if a child weighs 10 kilograms, they get 100 milligrams of ibuprofen, and it's every 6 to 8 hours. If they're using acetaminophen or Tylenol, it's 15 milligrams per kilogram per dose. And that's given every 4 hours or so. And so if people write that down and then they are looking at their packages and say the package shows that it's, you know, if we're dealing with ibuprofen, and you know, it comes in a little dropper, milliliter droppers. So sometimes the concentration will be 100 milligrams per milliliter. Well, then you know that if a child is 10 kilograms, they get 1 milliliter of that, or one full dropper of it. So that's sort of a way to keep track. It's writing down your child's weight and then calculating the dose and then seeing how much of that is available per milliliter in those drops. And if it's a tablet, well, then you go to the site and it'll tell you how much of a tablet to take for that child. But
they don't even mind you calling their hotline either to ask.
No, they don't. Yeah.
So just look up poison control, Google it. Phone them if you want to. It's not going to be a hassle. They would rather you call and get the dose right. You know what? One of the trickiest problems is most parents I know, you're a doctor, so I'm sure you weigh your patients using the metric system in kilograms. Everyone I know, it's one of those weird things that's a holdover. People know their weight in pounds.
Yeah, I know. That's very true. And even when the babies are brought in and you know, everything is done in kilos. It's just a lot easier. It's a base 10 system, right? It's much easier to use than dealing with 16 ounces for a pound. But nevertheless, you know, you say, oh, your baby's gone. You know, your baby's 5 kilos now. What a fantastic growth. And you go, well, what's 5 kilos? Oh, it's 11 pounds. Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, is that interesting? And height, too.
Yeah, yeah.
People know their height also, in feet and inches.
Yeah, so same thing, you know, by the age of 2, after you've measured the child at age 2, you can predict where they're going to be when they're 18. And they go, yeah, they're going to be about 180 centimeters. What? Oh, about 6 feet tall. Oh, yeah, fantastic.
You know, when we did that with our kids at age 2, and I remember their heights, because I come from a family where people are small in stature. You'll laugh at this because I'm not very tall, but I'm a giant in my immediate family. Head and shoulders above everybody. Right. So we were curious, you know, and I got to tell you, my son was like 5'10", 5'11". He's a little taller than that. He's just over 6 feet, maybe 6'1". And my daughter is almost to the inch as well. What I predicted. I'm shocked. Because to me, some people say, well, an inch is a big difference. I don't think it is. I think that's pretty much nailed what he was going to be. Why can you know at age 2? That's so bizarre to me.
These are based on measurements of millions of children and the averages over, you know, when you look at a growth chart, you'll see there's what's called percentiles. So that it goes everything from, you know, the first percentile to the 100th. And that simply means, if, say you have someone that's at the 75th percentile, it means for every 100 children, they are either taller than 75 of those children, or they weigh more than 75 of those children. So that's what that means. So
see, I'm in the belief that my parents and all my aunts and uncles probably were shorter than you would have predicted it to, because they lived through the Second World War and rationing malnourishment. So at 2 years old, you can predict somebody's ultimate height fairly closely, providing there's nothing catastrophic that happens.
That's exactly right. And sometimes what you can see is that if you've been measuring a child and you see that they dip down a little bit, well, sometimes they can tell you that there's something wrong, or that they're just not eating very well. And it can be, as a child gets older, you can say, you know, if you're eating more healthy food, fruits and vegetables and stuff, you might be able to bring yourself up on that curve a little bit more. And that can be motivation for them to do that. So, but it is a very accurate measurement. I mean, when you measure at 2 years of age, you're pretty much bang on by the time they're 18. And a lot of times they forget, right? So the children forget, they're young. So when they're a little bit older, they're 7 or 8 years old, and you say, hey, you know, I can tell you how tall you're going to be when you're 18. Really? Yeah, let's go do that. And so it's actually a fun thing to do. And it does tend to work out.
And it might be a good idea to write it down in kilograms too. It'll come in handy when it comes to
that's right.
medication and going to visit your doctor. Thanks, Doc. You have a good weekend.
Thanks. You too, Bill.
Medical Myth Busting with Dr. Perry Dworkin. Don't forget to listen to him this Sunday house call. 3 o'clock in the afternoon on News Talk 580 CFRA. It's the Morning Rush. Issue you ever could talk about on a show like this. We're talking about how our democracy functions, and we can't have other countries changing the course of elections. We know for sure they've tried. How successful they were, I still don't feel like I really know. And it could be nothing. I want you to know I'm still open-minded about that. There may not be a whole lot here. But it sure looks like the government is going out of its way to make sure we don't know more about it. And that should concern all of us. And this situation with David Johnson, I don't understand how he can hang on when Parliament has expressed its will, wants him to step down. And whatever you used to think about his credibility, I think we all have to agree now. There are just too many questions. It does us no good. In a democracy like ours, it does us no good at all to have someone go through a process when we know ahead of time no one is going to believe the answer. Or the answer will be believed by some automatically and rejected by others automatically. The whole situation was already political. Most things are. But it's already too political by both sides. But now it's just untenable. NDP leader Jagmeet Singh continues to put pressure on the Prime Minister to remove David Johnson because he's made it clear he's not going to quit. Call for a full public inquiry to examine foreign interference. Singh says a former CSIS director has testified that a public inquiry is the best way to ensure Canadian democratic practices are being protected and restore public confidence in our entire electoral system.
Dan Stanton, a former CSIS counterintelligence officer, testified in committee. He said that a public inquiry into foreign interference is necessary. He, like many Canadians, is wondering what's going on. He said very clearly that there are safeguards that we can put in place to protect sensitive information. I agree with Mr. Stanton. Now, will the Prime Minister do the right thing and listen to Canadians, listen to this House, and listen to a former CSIS counterintelligence officer?
And the answer is?
Mr. Speaker, I'll do one better than a former CSIS agent. The current leadership across our intelligence agencies and across the public service continue to say that the best way to move forward on this is not with a public inquiry that would have to happen behind closed doors.
Yeah, so that's sort of become typical Justin Trudeau now, right? Given two people with equal credibility, he's going to trust the one who works for him, who, you know, may be a little more reluctant to tell the Prime Minister what he doesn't want to hear, as opposed to someone who used to work for him. I think you have to weigh both positions and try to find the middle ground. I also think if you're the Prime Minister, you have to recognize that your country is losing faith in the system, and it is your job to restore it at any cost. at any cost, including, yes, a public inquiry or resigning from your position. That's how important this issue is. There comes a moment when even a prime minister, a leader, has to be a leader and say, you know what? People don't trust our electoral system in this country. That's a problem. I've made a mistake here. I'm going to step aside and let somebody else make other decisions. Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre continues to push the prime minister on why Chinese police stations continue to operate in this country. The prime minister says the opposition leader can't properly grasp the situation with Chinese interference and is not in a position to comment on it because he refuses to be briefed on confidential documentation. Poilievre says he is not going to fall into that trap.
All an act with this guy. He would have you believe that if he committed me to secrecy and forced me to take an oath of silence, that that would somehow close the Beijing police stations here in Canada? Of course not.
Those two went at it yesterday during question period. It was unbelievable. Some are calling it one of the greatest debates in Canadian political history. But I'm going to save it because Ethan, who's in for Katie, wants to do it on trending. He wants to save. So that was part of the exchange. We're just warming up into it. Then it got deeply personal. Now, if you just like to hear good debate, I think you'll enjoy it on that level. Some people will be offended that it got too personal and that's not where politics should be. Fair argument, I suppose. But it's worth hearing it. So that's coming up in, what, 30, 40 minutes from now? It's around 7:50, 7:56, depending on how long I chat leading up to it and how little time I leave for Ethan. But at the end of this hour, that final trending segment, we'll let you hear more of that debate from yesterday. It's 7:16. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
You're listening to the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
I'll bet you PJ's never had heat stroke in his life. Never. That guy drinks water by the gallon. PJ, I was out golfing yesterday. I thought about you. I'm like, I'm gonna hydrate like PJ. The water bottle is never going to leave my mouth. I drank so much water yesterday. And you know, not to be indelicate here, but I didn't urinate at all in the 4 hour, 5 hours of golf. And it didn't for a couple of hours afterwards. So no matter how much I drank, my body was just sweating it out. Whew. Drink like PJ. That's the key. PJ has no comment on that.
I was letting you finish. I have had heat stroke before, but I was really silly and I didn't wear sunscreen in Hawaii. And I got like blisters on my face.
That's the worst, huh?
And then the last 4 days of Hawaii, I just stayed in my room. Because I couldn't move.
Yeah, I had so many bad burns and blisters when I was young. That's why now I'm always having these cancerous lesions removed from my skin. It doesn't turn into cancer the first day, right? It's 20, 30, whatever years later. You pay the price for it. But the answer back then when I was a kid was to put some baby oil on and go outside and expose yourself to the sun and get a tan to protect yourself from the sun. So the logic was, damage your skin to prevent damage to your skin.
Makes sense.
But the reality is, like, I'm not just going to stay home and stay in the shade for your entire life. You're going to go out. Even with sunscreen, you're still getting some damage to your skin, but you minimize it at least. You do the best you can and still live your life. It's all about balance. But, yeah, so I had tons of sunscreen on, and I actually remembered, I hate putting sunscreen on. It feels all oily, and you put it in your face and it gets in your eyes and stuff. But I stopped halfway through and redid the sunscreen and walked around with an umbrella to try to shade myself from the sun, which felt kind of ridiculous, but I think it helped too. You just got to do whatever you can to stay as cool as you can. And because, you know, this can actually be life-threatening if you're not careful. Ottawa Public Health says when we get heat waves like the one that should come to an end today, it's important to remember that our bodies take 2 weeks to acclimatize to extreme temperatures. So we haven't had enough. And just as we're acclimatizing, it's going to return to more seasonal, a little warm by seasonal standards, but still, you know, sunny in 22, 23 is a long way from what we had yesterday. Birgit Eisenhagen is with the Healthy Environments Team. I hope that's how you pronounce your name. Our news department provided me a pronunciation guide for your first name, which was actually the easy one to pronounce and not the second name. So anyway, she's with the, or he, I don't know, is with the Healthy Environments team. She says, if you have to be outside, be aware of heat stroke symptoms.
You might start feeling kind of sick to your stomach. And sometimes you might get blurred vision, not all the time, but sometimes, or a headache. And then when it gets incredibly dangerous is when you start getting dizzy, confused, and your skin looks super hot, and you could have hallucinations, or you can even lose consciousness at that point. That point is like really, really dangerous.
Just at the very end yesterday, I put the ball up on the tee. It was literally at the 18th hole. Put the ball on the tee, and as I looked down, it sort of went in and out of focus for a second. I thought, okay, despite all my best efforts, I am glad we're about done now because I got to finish this off. So, you know, I made a mishit. I'm like, I don't care. I'm just going to pick up the ball and take another shot. The ball's in the woods somewhere. It's going to stay and just get out of there. I probably should have just left right there and then. But, yeah, I felt that just that moment of, whoa, that was weird. She says an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Everyone should be taking precautions before going out. And remember, stay hydrated and take breaks from the sun.
People that are most at risk are elderly and the very young, and those people who work outdoors or people who are on certain medications, right? And so it's really important just to keep hydrated. You know, the prevention is the key. You know, if you do end up getting heat exhaustion or heat stroke, it's really important to get yourself into the cool areas.
I'm thinking golf cart and maybe only 9 holes today. That's what I'm thinking. Still got to walk a little bit, right? A lot of times your cart has to stay on the path or whatever. But yeah, I don't see me doing another 18 like yesterday. If you can stay indoors today, even might be good because tomorrow is going to be just perfect to be outside. 7:27, it's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
This is News Talk 580. Listen anytime, anywhere, through your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. Now, the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll continues on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Good morning. What an incredible week it's been. Not too often you get to say it, but maybe too hot. Shattered the record yesterday in Ottawa. Got up to 35 degrees, a little bit more than that at the airport. 35 degrees. And it was the first day of June. Absolutely unbelievable. So one more day of this, and then we can kind of move on to something more normal. Big deal around here is our producer Katie's wedding is on the weekend. It looks like she's going to have picture-perfect weather for it. Cooler than it is right now. Maybe the odd cloud to come in. We could have some scattered thunder showers this afternoon before any of that happens, but at least maybe it'll cool things off a little bit. Does that, doesn't it? A thunderstorm feels like, you know, a little hot and humid. Then the thunderstorm comes and it goes and just, everything feels just a little fresher afterwards. I love the smell of a thunderstorm on a hot summer day, even though it's not even technically summer quite yet. But what a day yesterday. All across the province, there was debate about LGBTQ rights because it's Pride Month and a number of students were absent from schools. We hear from the Ottawa Catholic School Board. My kids attend a high school at the Catholic School Board and they had an event. A bunch of kids went up to their school board headquarters for the event. Could have found a place a little more charming than that. But most of the kids, I talked to my kids, it was just an interesting day for them. And they learned about the human rights of people in the LGBT community. But some parents didn't want to send their kids at all. I guess that's their right too. I just think maybe that misses the point a little bit, that this is just about basic human rights. It's not about promoting a lifestyle one over the other. Although I think that there are many parents, and there's some legitimacy to this, there are some parents who feel that it has become about promoting a lifestyle, that maybe there's a lesson here, I think, about having a soft touch when you're winning. Because we've come so far in this area, The world is so much better, in my view, than it was 10 or 20 years ago. But it seemed like some of these questions had been asked and answered, and we were all kind of moving on with our lives. And now suddenly, maybe influenced by U.S. media and some of the debates they're having there, I think that the issue of gender identity got mixed in with the gay rights as well, and it revamped that conversation in a way that some are definitely saying, look, it's too much. My kids are talking, it's all they're talking about at schools. I think that's an exaggeration, but I've heard parents say this. I get your emails. I see your texts. And there are times when even, and I think about it, wow, didn't you talk about this last month already? Are we spending too much time on that and not enough time on the basics? So I think that's what's happening. There's a bit of a backlash happening here. Sometimes when you're winning a debate, it's time to speak more quietly and not keep hitting on it. And I think it's unfortunate because what we can't have is people's basic human rights, the right to love who they want to live, to do what they want with a consenting adult behind closed doors, and have it be none of our business. We don't want to see us slide backwards on this. So while some parents might feel uncomfortable with the decision about flying the flag here in Ottawa, Reese Walker, one of the students, say, for her, the flag welcomes inclusion and has received positive response at her school.
When we think about what the flag represents, it is about a celebration of the community.
I think it's just amazing that so many people at my school are being represented. It makes a lot of people just feel included at our school.
Angela Prescott is a parent in the board. She questions why some parents are so afraid of supporting Pride and are harming their child's education by keeping them out of schools. She said Pride Month is a time of education, not to turn the kids, this is the phrase she used, not to turn the kids gay, but to promote acceptance.
To feel like it's okay to be who you are. In Pride Month, it's celebrated, and it's a time to be excited about that.
Says there are likely a number of kids struggling with who they are and keeping them away from schools and denouncing Pride as potentially devastating effects. Back to student Reese Walker, she says she's saddened to see a number of her friends missing. Not of their own choosing, but I guess their parents wouldn't let them go, but it's hopeful the more support grows each year, the closer the board gets to true inclusion.
There's always going to be some people who don't agree or who have different views in general, and I think one day we'll get to a day where everyone can be included.
Toby Whitfield was asked about the York Catholic School District Board near Toronto voting against flying the rainbow flag. He says the board says they're promoting inclusion, but their actions speak otherwise.
When we think about what the flag represents, it is about a celebration of the community, but it's also a reminder about the progress that we've made, but also the work that still needs to happen. And so I think, you know, in some ways, this is such a disappointing and an alarming act. And it does send that message of come to school, but don't be your full self.
Whitfield says acceptance is moving in the wrong direction, especially after the board defended their decision, saying it doesn't align with their faith.
There are so many attacks online, in person, right across the world against the 2S LGBTQ2+ community, but also right here at home in Ottawa. We see protests, we see local community activists under attack, and really there is this ongoing rise of anti-2S LGBTQ2 hate, really in every part of the community that I think we're seeing.
So this is a tough issue, especially when it comes to gender issues. I mean, you're talking about this complicated mix of biology and psychology, and I don't even pretend to have all the answers. I just know that if one of my kids came to me and said, Dad, I've been living my life as a boy, but I actually think I'm a girl, well, I would get the best psychological and medical advice I could get, and I would have long conversations with my kids, and I'd make a very private decision to go forward. And I like to think I'm educated a little bit in this area because of my job, and I'm interested in it. But I'd become a hell of a lot more educated about it. And I don't know ultimately what I decide to do. And, you know, my kids are going to grow up. They're going to make their own decisions as well. I don't know how you handle this. I think it's really complicated, and it's tough to talk about it. But I think it's also worth noting that I have a stack of sound bites here from people, and they all have exactly the same point of view. And I think that's interesting. I think that's a mistake we make in mainstream media too, is that there's this assumption that the debate is over. And if anybody dares offer a different point of view, we silence them. And in this case, it's silenced through exclusion. It's just, I don't have any of those sound bites to play for you. And I can't reflect that position. I'd like to hear from someone who is a devout Catholic about why they think that what we're teaching in our schools right now goes against their faith, and why they think that children may change their sexuality based on the influence of others. Yeah, I do think kids are prone to trends and group pressure, and you know, it's possible some child will say, and believe me, I do think this is possible, but I think it doesn't happen much. But it's possible kids are like, well, all my other friends have an identity, so I want to have an identity. I don't want to just be the straight kid who was born male and feels male. But those things don't last. I don't think you can make a permanent change to somebody's sexuality or sexual identity based on what others think and feel. I don't. I think for most kids, you figure it out on your own, and you're attracted to who you're attracted to. And I don't know why you could be born in one body, one gender's body, and feel like the other. I have no clue how that begins. I just know as a human being, I want to be sensitive to that. And people are having a hard enough time with their lives, I'm sure, going through something like that, the struggle of that. I don't want to make that worse. I just want to recognize it. Okay, you want me? You were Jane, now you're Bob. That's okay with me. None of my business. You figure it out. I'm just going to leave you alone to live your life. But we've already seen in this city, someone stands up at a board meeting and just asks a question related to safety with gender identity and bathroom usage, and they're shot down before they get a word out of their mouth. And that's not healthy either. I think that's making the problem worse. This idea that if you stop and ask questions or say, well, what about my religious teaching? Doesn't that have some validity? Why is my religious belief in a country where I'm allowed to believe what I want to believe, why is it being shot down? If we won't even listen, then we're going to continue to have this backlash. That, to me, is what's causing the backsliding, is that we are shutting people down. We're saying, no, this is a decided issue. Any other point of view is just hateful. We have to keep listening to each other. 7:47, The Morning Rush. All right, Ethan Fink is here today. Is that the Rocky music in the background? What am I hearing?
Eye of the Tiger, yes.
Eye of the Tiger. The political battle to end all battles. Well, sadly, that's probably not true. But are people actually saying, Ethan, is that the hyperbole we're hearing, that this is one of the greatest political debates in Canadian history?
Yep.
Okay.
One of the greatest exchanges to ever go down in Canadian political history, what happened during question period between Justin Trudeau and Pierre Poilievre, when things were getting a little personal, when they were deciding to debate or continuing the debate about foreign interference. Trudeau struck a little bit of a comment saying Poilievre just likes the sound of his own voice. He doesn't want to be briefed for the sake of, you know, his whole hiding behind the veil of ignorance. And Poilievre decided to get a little feisty. He fired back, making a little bit more of a personal shot at Trudeau. PJ, part one here.
So the high school drama teacher over here accuses others of liking the sounds of their own voices. This from a guy who, if he were made of chocolate, he would eat himself.
Great shot. And then what people...
It is a good shot.
What people didn't
that
expect...
That was one of my mother's favorite lines. When we were kids, if we did anything that she thought made us look self-absorbed, she'd say, you know, if you were bloody chocolate, you'd eat yourself out, Bell. And I'd say, Mom, whatever was made out of chocolate, I would eat. I love chocolate. No, I haven't heard that one in a long time. Have you heard that before? I bet you haven't.
I had never heard that before until yesterday.
An old Scottish saying. At least I thought it was Scottish. If you were chocolate, you'd eat yourself. Okay, so what's the response to if you were chocolate, you'd eat yourself?
Everyone thought Trudeau would just kind of sweep it under the rug or ignore it or just move on, and he fired back.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I was a high school teacher before getting into politics, and I'm having a little trouble remembering what exactly the job that the Leader of the Opposition had before getting into politics.
Because Pierre Poilievre has been a politician pretty much his entire adult life.
Yep.
I get it. I see. Yeah, I see where you went there. Good one.
And, of course, Poilievre did what he did best. He took exactly what Trudeau said to him, and he spun it back.
Yes, and Yes, and he left right in the middle of the semester, and I'm having trouble remembering why.
Oh!
Alluding to some conspiracy theories about why he left his job.
Yeah.
Oh!
Ooh, that got more of a ooh than it got a laugh or an applause from the conservative ranks. I heard one, I saw one analyst this morning, political analyst, saying that it was a great comeback by Pierre Poilievre because he didn't say or accuse him of anything. He just put it out there, used his own words against him. Now, are those the only three you have?
Those are the only three I've got there.
You know what? So this is how we're going to finish it off, PJ. We're going to play them back to back to back without comment, just so you can really hear the exchange kind of in real time. Is it easy to do that, PJ? Can we do that?
I'll make it work.
All right, so here we are, listening from yesterday's question period in what is described as one of the greatest political exchanges in Canadian history.
So the high school drama teacher over here accuses others of liking the sounds of their own voices. This from a guy who, if he were made of chocolate, he would eat himself.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I was a high school teacher before getting into politics, and I'm having a little trouble remembering what exactly the job that the Leader of the Opposition had before getting into politics.
Yes, and he left right in the middle of the semester, and I'm having trouble remembering why.
Oh.
All right, PJ, as someone who's a mixed martial arts fighter, let's take this to the judges. We have three of us. How do you score this one? Start with you, Ethan.
That was a solid 9 out of 10.
That's not how you score a fight, but okay.
Aiden has no idea how to score a fight. PJ, you score the fight. Teach him how to do it.
I'm saying that's a 10. 10-8 from Pierre. I think there was two drops there.
10-8 for Pierre. 10 points, Pierre. 8 points,
no.
Justin.
No, when you score it. So if I say 10-8 for Pierre, it's 10 points for Pierre, 8 for Justin.
Okay.
Seemingly like he got dropped in the round. So if it's like a close round but you give it to one person, you go 10-9. So someone's always got to have 10.
Okay, well, let's make it easy.
Okay,
let's
sorry.
Say that was one round. Who won that round?
Pierre.
You thought Pierre won that round?
I think so.
All right. So that's one judge for Pierre, and we need two out of three here. Ethan?
I'm gonna take the side of Trudeau, actually. I thought him just being able to fire back that quickly and not make it as personal as Pierre did gave him the slight edge on that one.
So if those were punches, would you say Pierre threw more punches, but Justin's punch was more direct?
Yes.
Less dirty. So you score it, Justin.
Yeah.
I have to say that I'm having trouble remembering what you did before you were in politics wasn't all that clever. I think he held back trying not to make a dirty punch, but I think the punch kind of brushed off his cheek and had no impact. And I think Pierre got in two solid shots. I think it's an easy win for Pierre Poilievre. So the judges score this. 2-1, Pierre Poilievre. Technical knockout. The Morning Rush. Good morning.
Take us with you on your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto through your iHeartRadio app. It's The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on Newstalk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Oh, a couple of things to celebrate today for me, if I could just take a moment to do that. One of them involves you, all of you. Thank you for being there every day. Wow. It's just extraordinary. Just got a note from the boss about how well this station is doing and how well the show is doing, and that's something we talk about, and I won't bore you with the details. Just suffice to say, if you were hoping that I'd be fired anytime soon, probably not going to happen for a little while longer, but you guys have been great and supportive of this show. Maybe not the first year when I got here, but slowly but surely, I think we've all become friends, or at least we have an understanding of each other. So thank you for being there every day, and I love this city, love this job. So happy that a lot of you feel the same way about me. So that's great. Thank you. And thanks to my great team who make it all so easy to do. That's awesome. And a great management team to work for. This has just been a great experience for me. 7 years in now. Incredible. The other thing I have to be grateful for and we're going to celebrate is my wife's birthday today. Happy birthday, Sylvie. I don't think I'll tell you how old she is. I think she's actually kind of okay with that. You know, she'll actually tell people her age because she looks 28. So when you look 28, people, they could say you're 112 and it wouldn't matter. But, and you know, you hear me talk about her often on the air about what an incredible woman that she is. But I got to tell you, in the last couple of years, she's made some changes in her life. And listen, I talked to her because she was beautiful. I asked her on a date because she was smart. I asked her on a second date because she was funny and said yes to the first date. I asked her to marry me because she was exceptionally bright and caring. I've stayed with her because she's had my back like no one else has ever had under all circumstances. But even I have learned more about her in the past couple of years. What an unbelievable intellect she has. Just a force of nature. This woman is remarkable. I could not have chosen a better partner and parent for my children. Happy birthday. The Morning Rush.
This is News Talk 580 CFRA.
Well, as you just heard in the newscast, Meta, the company that owns Facebook, I think they're kind of going to war with the Canadian government here a little bit, and Canadians are stuck right in the middle of it. But you may notice today that a random number of Canadians won't be allowed to share news stories on the internet. Oh, that's an interesting CTV story. Maybe I'll share that on my Facebook page. Oh, what's going on? Why can't I do that? You'll just be chosen at random. So this is a tough one as a member of the mainstream media. Of course, I want to see media thrive and, well, survive would be good. Survive, maybe even thrive. I think media is an important part of any democratic society. I want to get paid for my work. All of those things are true. And when I said this to a good friend who works inside the Canadian Conservative Party, she said, and I said, you're a former member of the media. Why are you against this bill? She said, I believe in everything you just said. The problem is this bill doesn't really do that, and it does a lot of other things you wouldn't like. Wondered what Brian Lilly thought about that, and we have him every Friday anyway, so I thought I'd ask. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Bill. You're right, and your friend in the Conservative Party's right. Bill C-18 does require Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, to pay companies for using their work, links, so on, but it does do other things that probably aren't great. But most of the focus has been on this links, and that's what's driving the move by Meta, Facebook and Instagram, to make this change.
Okay, let's say you wrote a column today, and I really like it. Mm-hmm. So I go on my Facebook page, and I want to share it. I want to say, hey, check this column out by Brian Lilly. He's so on the money here. How does that harm you? In fact, couldn't I argue it helps you? Because doesn't it eventually link to your story anyway on your company's website?
Yes, in some cases, it doesn't take you to the website, depending on various platforms, and that's been a bone of contention. In other cases, it does take you to my company's website or to CFRA's website or what have you. The argument is these guys have gone in, and despite the traffic to media companies like mine and yours, still being healthy, they take up all the advertising revenue. We're looking for a way to cost share. I don't think C18 is not the way that I would have gone. It's the way, you know, it's the argument that my employer made. I would have preferred a business solution, a business to business negotiation. So it's interesting. Facebook will argue. Let's stop calling them Meta. Let's just call them Facebook, what they are. Facebook argues that there's no need for them to pay anything. Yet they have done these business relationships with certain media companies in Canada, not with others. They've done them with media companies in Australia and other countries. And the unfortunate part is, for the most part, they don't sign these deals unless they're threatened with legislation. So they admit that there is a cost benefit to them for signing these deals, that there's a business case for these deals, but they don't want the deals unless they're forced to do them. So while C-18 may be clumsy, whether we're talking France, the UK, the US, or Australia, these are just some of the companies that have brought in similar legislation. Facebook doesn't act until they're told they have to. You know, they're taking the gravy. Why would they give up the gravy?
Right. Before we get into the parts of the legislation that I'm told I wouldn't like, does this possibly accomplish the goals here for the Trudeau government?
I mean, maybe it will. If it is put into full action, it would see money going from the tech giants to media companies, which, you know, despite our once giant size, are much smaller than they used to be. You know that at Bell Media. I know that at Post Media. The odd part is, once again, the way this is structured, CBC would get the majority of the money. Thank you, Trudeau government. So Post Media, which is my employer for The Sun, The Citizen, National Post, we're wearing this, and we're, you know, portrayed by opponents of the bill as, you know, this is corporate welfare for us. We're not going to get most of the money. It's going to go mostly to CBC, followed by CTV or Bell Media and Rogers. So it's is it the long-term solution for media? Maybe it's part of a long-term solution, along with finding other ways of generating revenue, because, you know, people consume news more than ever. But before, we used to get money from advertisers, be it on TV, radio, or in print, and now that's not there. That's, what is it, 70% of the digital ad revenue, 70% or more, goes to two companies, Google and Facebook. And even the federal government, despite saying that they want to help media, they put most of their ad money into those outlets as well. You know, we all in our respective online media outlets have eyeballs. We've got people coming to us. We can prove that. But the federal government puts their money into Google and Facebook and then turns around and says, let us subsidize you. That's problematic. I can tell you that the Ontario government has put a lot of money into traditional media over the last while. I think having the premier's now former chief of staff be a longtime media executive helped with that, because he knew that it was an effective way to communicate and would reach people that these other platforms wouldn't. But the federal government, a lot of the big companies in this country, are only putting in money to those two online outlets. And that was all part of a big speech recently by the president of the Toronto Star to the Canadian Club here in Toronto that I attended. And he highlighted one Canadian media company that I think the number was $50 million that they spent on advertising. And the Star share of that was less than $5,000, I believe.
Yeah, he made the same speech here in Ottawa, and he came on our show and actually talked about that too. So when my conservative friends say there are parts about this I wouldn't really like, have you already kind of outlined those, or are there other parts to it that might really upset me? Is it simply the conservative view that says government should stay out of this and let business handle it?
I think it's mostly on that side. I'd have to go deeper into the weeds, but this is part of a larger package that the conservatives are opposing on Bill C-11, which is the Online Streaming Act, which gives the CRTC control of basically anything that you consume online that is in written, visual, or audio form. It puts the CRTC in control, much the way they are in control of the radio station we're talking on right now. And then there's another act that they're promising for later this fall called the Online Harms Act, I think is what they're referring to it as now. We'll see what they call it eventually. And combined, the three of them give the government an immense control over the internet that the conservatives have just decided they're going to fight all aspects of it. You know, down in the States, down in over in the UK and other countries, conservative-oriented politicians have fought big tech on some of the content side things. The party of conservatives have not. They fought them in other countries, saying big tech leans liberal, and that's why they've come out against them. The liberals have been successful in turning around and saying these tech giants are killing your local paper. Why are the conservatives defending them? And so that's been an effective attack by by the liberals. Like I said, it's kind of all three bills together, and the conservatives didn't find a way to thread the needle and say, okay, well, we can support some aspects of C-18, but we're definitely against C-11, the one that says, you know, it literally gave the CRTC the power to say, just like with music, if you're listening to one of Bell Media's music stations, you've got to hear, what is it, one in three songs in primetime has to be Canadian? You could turn around and say, well, I know you're enjoying your Audible subscription, but you can't listen to another book until you listen to a Canadian book. They have that power now.
Yeah, I don't know why everyone isn't against that idea. That's just, I don't see the room even for debate there. Thank you, Brian. Appreciate your explaining your point of view on that one for us and shining a little light on it. You have a great weekend.
You too, Bill.
All right. Stay well hydrated. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll. All right. Ethan Fink is here today. Is that the Rocky music in the background? What am I hearing?
Eye of the Tiger, yes.
Eye of the Tiger. The political battle to end all battles. Well, sadly, that's probably not true. But are people actually saying, Ethan, is that the hyperbole we're hearing, that this is one of the greatest political debates in Canadian history?
Yep.
Okay.
One of the greatest exchanges to ever go down in Canadian political history, what happened during question period between Justin Trudeau and Pierre Poilievre, when things were getting a little personal, when they were deciding to debate or continuing the debate about foreign interference. Trudeau struck a little bit of a comment saying Poilievre just likes the sound of his own voice. He doesn't want to be briefed for the sake of, you know, his whole hiding behind the veil of ignorance. And Poilievre decided to get a little feisty. He fired back, making a little bit more of a personal shot at Trudeau. PJ, part one here.
So the high school drama teacher over here accuses others of liking the sounds of their own voices. This from a guy who, if he were made of chocolate, he would eat himself.
Great shot. And then what people...
It is a good shot.
What people didn't
that
expect...
That was one of my mother's favorite lines. When we were kids, if we did anything that she thought made us look self-absorbed, she'd say, you know, if you were bloody chocolate, you'd eat yourself out, Bill. And I'd say, Mom, whatever was made out of chocolate, I would eat. I love chocolate. No, that's I haven't heard that one in a long time. Have you heard that before? I bet you haven't.
I had never heard that before until yesterday.
An old Scottish saying. At least I thought it was Scottish. If you were chocolate, you'd eat yourself. Okay, so what's the response to if you were chocolate, you'd eat yourself?
Everyone thought Trudeau would just kind of sweep it under the rug or ignore it or just move on, and he fired back.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I was a high school teacher before getting into politics, and I'm having a little trouble remembering what exactly the job that the Leader of the Opposition had before getting into politics.
Because Pierre Poilievre has been a politician pretty much his entire adult life.
Yep.
I get it. I see. Yeah, I see where he went there. Good one.
And, of course, Poilievre did what he did best. He took exactly what Trudeau said to him, and he spun it back.
Yes, and he left right in the middle of the semester, and I'm having trouble remembering why.
Oh! Alluding to some conspiracy theories about why he left his job.
Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh. That got more of a ooh than it got a laugh or an applause, you know, from the conservative ranks. I saw one analyst this morning, political analyst, saying that it was a great comeback by Pierre Poilievre because he didn't say or accuse him of anything. He just put it out there, used his own words against him. Now, are those the only three you have?
Those are the only three I've got there.
You know what? So this is how we're going to finish it off, PJ. We're going to play them back to back to back without comment, just so you can really hear the exchange kind of in real time. Is it easy to do that, PJ? Can we do that?
I'll make it work.
All right. So here we are listening from yesterday's question period in what is described as one of the greatest political exchanges in Canadian history.
So the high school drama teacher over here accuses others of liking the sounds of their own voices. This from a guy who, if he were made of chocolate, he would eat himself.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I was a high school teacher before getting into politics, and I'm having a little trouble remembering what exactly the job that the Leader of the Opposition had before getting into politics.
Yes, and yes, and he left right in the middle of the semester, and I'm having trouble remembering why.
All right. PJ is someone who's a mixed martial arts fighter. Let's take this to the judges. We have three of us. How do you score this one? Start with you, Ethan.
That was a solid 9 out of 10.
That's not how you score a fight, but okay.
Ethan has no idea how to score a fight. PJ, you score the fight. Teach him how to do it.
I'm saying that's a 10-8 from Pierre. I think there was two drops there.
10-8 for Pierre. 10 points, Pierre. 8 points.
No.
Justin.
No, when you score it. So if I say 10-8 for Pierre, it's 10 points for Pierre, 8 for Justin.
Okay.
Seemingly like he got dropped in the round. So if you do, if it's like a close round, but you give it to one person, you go 10-9. So someone's always got to have 10.
Okay, well, let's make it easy.
Okay,
let's
sorry.
Say that was one round. Who won that round?
Pierre.
You thought Pierre won that round?
I think so.
All right. So that's one judge for Pierre, and we need two out of three here. Ethan?
I'm gonna take the side of Trudeau, actually. I thought him just being able to fire back that quickly and not make it as personal as Pierre did gave him the slight edge on that one.
So if those were punches, would you say Pierre threw more punches, but Justin's punch was more direct?
Yes.
Less dirty. So you score it. Justin.
Yeah.
I have to say that the I'm having trouble remembering what you did before you were in politics wasn't all that clever. I think he held back trying not to make a dirty punch, but I think the punch kind of brushed off his cheek and had no impact. And I think Pierre got in two solid shots. I think it's an easy win for Pierre Poilievre. So the judges score this. 2-1, Pierre Poilievre. Technical knockout. The Morning Rush. Good morning.